Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
We're going to be looking at a conference that took place recently. It was the second International Dialogue of Civilizations and Tolerance Conference. Well, yeah, to tell us all about it, we welcome Rabbi Dr. Aaron Ariel Lavi, who is the Managing Director of the Or Torah Interfaith Center. Rabbi, good afternoon to you. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us on the show.
Hi, good afternoon. Nice to be here.
Yeah, good to have you on board, Rabbi, and thanks for availing your time to talk to us about this conference. Certainly inspiring and, yes, progressive. Let's just recap. It was the second International Dialogue of Civilizations and Tolerance Conference. So, Rabbi, let's open the conversation. What was this really all about and how did it go?
Well, it was organized by an organization called the Emirates Scholar Organization, backed by the Ministry of Tolerance. Mm-hmm. They have a ministry. It's a government ministry for tolerance in the United Arab Emirates. And that's very important because it was backed by the Emirati government, which means it has legitimacy and has a standing. The Or Torah Interfaith Center, which I manage, we work to make religion part of the solution. We work primarily with the Muslim world, bringing rabbis and imams together, developing content, connecting together, and trying to create a deep level reconciliation. And we partnered with this conference officially. We were one of the partners in the conference. We had a whole delegation of rabbis there. And, you know, it's not obvious and it's not self-evident that an Arab Muslim country is holding a conference like this publicly, openly, with the minister speaking, during a time which is still a time of war, with many Israeli and Jewish participants. Not only, the majority were obviously Muslims and other religions. But I think it was a very strong message. The purpose of the conference, I think, was to send a very strong message that through joint learning, through joint scholarship, through partnerships, we can actually chart a different course for dialogue between civilizations in general, and I would say even more specifically between the Abrahamic religions,
right.
Christianity, Judaism, Islam. We can figure out our things in a different way than violence and tensions.
Indeed. Rabbi, so you've outlined who was in attendance from a broad perspective, but let's just look at that a bit closely. Anyone who in prominence was there? Who really attended this conference? And from which country specifically?
So let's start with the general public, and then I'll say a few words about some key figures.
Mm-hmm.
In general, we're talking about a few hundreds of people, I believe, from 20 or 30 different countries. I don't have the exact list in front of me, but
sure.
very international.
Of course.
Obviously, many from the Middle East, but not only. Where they had people from Europe, from the States, from other countries. A lot of young people, which is important, a lot of students. A lot of academics and faith leaders, rabbis, imams, sheikhs. I would say that's the general audience in the conference. But there are a few figures to highlight. One of them is Sheikh Nayan, obviously, who is the Minister of Tolerance at the UAE, who gave a keynote speech and actually gave his sponsorship to this whole event. He was followed by Sheikh Abdallah bin Baya, who is the head of the Muslim Center for Peace in Abu Dhabi. He's a very prominent Muslim sheikh in his 90s, like a top league Islamic scholar. And he also gave a keynote speech about tolerance and the importance of that. These are two key figures. We had the Secretary General of the Baha'i Movement there. So I think these are a few, just to understand that the event really attracted key figures and high-caliber leaders. And that's important because at the end of the day, at least our theory of change at our center is that if we are able to connect significant, influential religious leaders,
okay.
We can then expand the message and trickle down to the broader circles, we might be able to change the atmosphere and the intellectual, cultural, religious climate that can then enable political leaders sign what they need to sign. We don't do politics. We don't do position papers on one state, two states, three and a half states. That's not our business. I mean, obviously, it is our business, but that's not what we focus on.
Okay.
But we're trying to create the environment because the way we see it, religion is a key part of the conflict in the Middle East and beyond. And it has to be part of the solution, and even beyond that, if there will not be a solution.
Indeed.
If we don't go through the religious aspect.
Indeed.
We have to harness religious leadership to this process.
Indeed. Rabbi, we have to go for a short news break. Are you able to spend a bit more time with us? There are quite a number of questions I'd like to run by you, if that's fine with you. Or is your diary?
Sure, sure. I can.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you. Rabbi Dr. Aaron Ariel Labi, Managing Director of the Or Torah Interfaith Center, joining us on the line to give us feedback on a conference that recently took place. This was the second International Dialogue of Civilizations and Tolerance Conference. For now, the time check, it's just about going 29 minutes to 5. Time now for a quick news update. Let's see what's happening in the world.
IFM 101.9 megahertz of life.
Well, it's just gone exactly 29 minutes to 5. If you've just joined us, welcome to the second hour of the Afternoon Overdrive on 101.9 High FM. I'm Michael McKenna. Joining me on the line, we have Rabbi Dr. Aaron Ariel Labi, who's the Managing Director of the Or Torah Interfaith Center. Rabbi, thank you so much for spending a bit more time with us. Okay, so this was the second International Dialogue of Civilizations and Tolerance Conference. So the first one... what objectives were achieved? What measurables were identified between then and now regarding this unique approach to this dialogue of civilizations and tolerance?
Well, in the UAE, they have a very interesting model of how to promote tolerance. They even teach it in other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And they sort of like... I'll talk about the local level first, and then we can talk about the international level.
Sure.
Now, tolerance, like many other social issues, it's hard to measure. It's not like you can press a button or use some device to know how much tolerance we have in the world. It doesn't work this way.
Of course.
But what you can do is survey online discourse, survey declarations by leading academics, rabbis, imams. Politicians, see what people say, see what opinion leaders are saying, and try to figure out where we stand. That's one thing. And then the other thing you can do is look at events, like how many hostile or violent events we had as opposed to nonviolent interactions between different civilizations.
Okay.
So I think that in this field, we need to be modest. It's not that like in 1 year you do the first conference, and then by the second conference, you can say that you changed the world. It takes a bit more time than that.
Of course.
But I can say in terms of the conference itself, so last year it was much smaller. Let me remind you that last year we were talking about February 2024. We're talking about, what was it, like 4 months into the war? We're talking about like the peak of the ground maneuver, the IDF ground maneuver in Gaza. Like mm-hmm. the world, not that it's over now, but we're in a slightly different situation. So it was smaller. There were maybe a handful of Israelis. It felt much less safe even to go there, even though the Emirates are a very safe place. But just in how people perceive it, it felt a bit less safe.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the goal in some sense was to expand the circles and to actually make this dialogue of civilizations the norm and not the exception. And I think that the growth of the amount of people, the caliber of the speakers, the amount of countries they come from, mm-hmm. the media exposure, which this interview is one item of that.
Right.
I think it shows that it shows a growth in the right direction, and I think the important piece about it is that by doing this conference and then talking about it, you know, in our respective communities, I'm talking to you now, mm-hmm. the imams and sheikhs over there are talking in Arabic to their communities and telling the story. It's sort of like you normalize tolerance and you normalize dialogue, and you actually say, guys, there is another way. Mm-hmm. We don't have to, we're not going to change our identities or give up our millennia-long traditions for the sake of short-term agreements. That's not going to happen. But we can actually use our identities as a source of connection, our different identities,
okay.
as a source of connection instead of a source of conflict. I think that's the key message, and we'll have to measure over the years how is that message being perceived, and especially how is it being echoed by other people who
right.
were not at the conference.
Right, indeed.
When you have adopters, that's when you actually have impact, not only when you have the same people in the same room saying the same thing.
Indeed. Indeed, Rabbi, interesting you mentioned that, because now, as you say, well what I wanted to ask next was what now exactly was taken away from the conference. You quite rightly say nothing can happen overnight, but now we want to expand on exactly what the conference was about, and of course what its main theme was, and what you would like now to deliver in your respective countries and societies. So how now are you targeting precisely what you took away from the conference? I mean, which sectors of societies, for example, like politics, for example, are there any intentions to take it into politics and to institutes, educational institutions?
Well, the theme this year, the focus was youth, actually.
Okay.
That was the main focus of the event. That's why we came as the Ottawa Interfaith Center, and together with us came a youth movement from Israel called the Noal, Hanor Oved Valomed, for those of you who know Hebrew. They're working and studying youth. It's a very prominent youth movement in Israel. And what's special about it, there are many things special about it, but the thing that's relevant in our case is that it's the largest Jewish Muslim youth movement in Israel.
Okay.
Probably in the world, I must say. It has about 80,000 members. I'm talking about teenagers. Of them, 20,000 are Arab Muslims in Israel. And they work together. They wear the same shirts. They go to many collaborative events and do things together. And they're not trying to expand that into a network called For MENA. MENA means Middle East, North Africa. That's the name of the region that we live in. So the For MENA project, its purpose is to take this model of young people working together and take it to other countries and create connections between Noal as a youth movement and other movements in Morocco, in the Emirates, in other places. So going back to your question about the target audience, so for us, working with youth is a key component. And I think what we would like to see over the coming year or even years is to see this network growing of collaboration between youth organizations, and also see how we as religious leaders, how we can actually harness more and more young people in our communities, you know, people who are now starting to become rabbis or starting to become imams.
Indeed.
How can we integrate that into their training? Not as the main thing. Obviously, if you study to be a rabbi, no, I studied many years. You need to first of all study Bible, Talmud, Halacha, Rishonim, Achronim. You know, first you need to become a rabbi. Okay, but as an ingredient in this process, why don't you learn a few things about the other Abrahamic religions and develop some skills on how to work with them? Because at the end of the day, as a pulpit rabbi, either in Israel or abroad, you will meet, or at least they will be next to you, leaders of other faith. And either you ignore them, and in that way you're not contributing to the solution, or you engage with them in a proper and efficient manner, in a way that enables us, as I said, to make religion part of the solution. So, you know, for example, our organization, the Ottawa Interfaith Center, is part of a much larger organization, the Ottawa Stone Network, founded by Rabbi Riskin, that I'm sure many of the listeners know. Now it is led by Rabbi Dr. Kenneth Brander. And we also have, you know, thousands of students in our institutions. We have high schools, we have post-high schools, institutions, yeshivot, and we try to also bring this content to them. And so the idea is that in those conferences that we have in the Emirates, we can bring everybody to a conference, but we can bring the leaders, create inspiration, create legitimacy, also give some encouragement to one another, because, you know, when you look outside, the world doesn't look so nice. It looks actually very violent.
Indeed, Rabbi, indeed, certainly, turbulent
and
times.
Spend a couple of days with people who are, you know, supporting each other and saying, no, we can do this. We can actually promote dialogue and tolerance, and then you go back home and it gives you energy and belief that this can actually work.
Rabbi, we'll leave it there, but I must thank you so much for just spending a bit more time to give us your views on the conference and where to from here. As the saying goes, little by little does the trick. And Rabbi, once again, thank you for joining us on the Afternoon Overdrive. Rabbi Dr. Aaron Ariel Lavi, who's the Managing Director of the Or Torah Interfaith Center.